Hi, Rob. Hi, Jason. You guys are doing a podcast about game building. Everybody listen.
Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, December 1st, 2014. You're listening to episode 131. My name is Rob. Sitting across from me is Jason. Made it through that intro in record time.
You did.
Yeah. Hey,
We're trying to speed through the show. That would be the way to do it.
That would be the way to do it. Yeah. We could talk really fast like the Micro Machines guy.
No, we couldn't.
No.
Well, I don't think either one of us could do that.
No, we couldn't do that.
But we could bumble on for an hour. Hey, let's do that.
We do that every week.
Yeah. You see the big news though?
Oh yeah.
Huge phone. Got my huge phone. My app fab.
Yep. His app fab.
The iPhone 6 Plus.
Oh, it's so big.
I'm going to be honest, when I first the first moment I took it out of the case and held it, I thought I've made a terrible mistake. This phone is too big.
It's like the size of a paperback book.
Right. And so I was like, gosh, I didn't say anything to you at first because I was like, I'm never going to admit to Rob that this is a bad choice. But so I had a hard time holding it, not because it was too big, but it was, then I realized it was the same problem you had when you got the iPhone 5 is
it's so thin.
It's hard to hold.
Slip out of my hands.
So I got a case it's a very slimline case. It doesn't really add much girth or thickness to it. Right.
It had some grip.
Just enough. Now I would not trade this phone for anything. It's the best. Totally glad with my decision.
Well, good. I'm happy for you. I certainly would not. I wouldn't want to carry that around in my pocket all day. It's just too big.
Right. Today was the first day where I couldn't put it in my shirt pocket.
Yeah.
Because the shirt I was wearing today, for some reason, has like a pocket. And then the little side of it is stitched in for like a pen.
Oh, I hate that.
Really?
That's so dumb.
So it won't fit. Like barely.
It's so dumb.
So
yeah.
So it has to sit in my pocket.
And I don't like to carry around a man purse like you, so I need to be able to put my phone in my pocket.
You know what's funny is whenever the listeners see you, you are carrying around a man purse.
Yeah, because that's where we're at a con or
hey, that's
what
I'm carrying around a man purse at the same time. In fact, who brought a purse here today?
Yeah, to carry headphones and recording equipment in.
and lipstick and stuff.
Well, you know, don't leave home without it, man. You never know. Hey, I got, well, whatever.
What'd be funny is if your wife made you carry lipstick and then one day you were here and you were like, oh, just grab my headphones, they're in the bag, and I open it up and there's like eyeliner and lipstick in there, and then I'd be like, you do use this as a purse.
Guess what? My wife doesn't make me. I have a secret to tell you, Jason. We've been friends for a long time and I know this is gonna stay between us. Never mind. Yeah. So episode 131.
Yeah, this is exciting times.
It is.
but hey, so the good news is,
what's the good news,
we're going to have a killer show tonight.
Yeah.
We talk about a lot of stuff.
Lots of stuff, all kinds of exciting things are happening.
Recently we had a game night. That was good times.
We did, yeah.
Played some games. We got to play Finish It for a new audience, three new people who'd never played it.
Yes, your wife and our friends Will and Roe.
Yeah.
And
we did try and record that. I don't know if it's going to sound okay or not.
I haven't listened back to it yet. There was some child noise in the background. Right. You know, that happens.
It's a bonus episode. If it's not terrible.
Yeah, I'll listen to it. I mean, worst case, I'll chop it up to kind of be best of, because I think it's probably about 40 minutes long. It might be too long. So, if nothing else, I'll chop it and make it best of, and we'll see how that goes.
It was a lot of fun, though. I mean, my wife afterwards said, I said, so what did you think of the game? She was like, that was really fun.
Oh,
so
she won, too.
She did win, even though she left halfway through the game. Yeah. That was the best part. Spoiler alert when you listen to the episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a lot of fun. We also played Camel Up, which was great.
Camel Up.
Roe and Will had played that once before, and you played it twice before?
I played it once before Gen Con.
Okay.
I feel like I had more fun at Gen Con than I did the other night.
How come?
I'm not sure. I think maybe the game was less surprising.
I can see that.
You know, like the first time playing it, it was completely new and I didn't know what to expect. It was so chaotic and crazy. And that was really, really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was still a lot of fun, but it wasn't as exciting the second time.
You know, not to defend the game, because I think it's a fun game, but yeah. I will admit I had less fun playing it on at the game night as well. The first game night, I had an excellent time playing it. But one of the things that happened in this game was everything kind of leveled out pretty early.
Yeah.
Nobody made much money. Like, the highest person was like 29, mm-hmm. I think. And normally we have someone over 30, if not two people, mm-hmm. Whenever I've played it. Usually me. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, it was a low-scoring game.
So it just, some of that excitement wasn't there in mm-hmm. the, yeah, so I don't know.
I'll definitely play it again.
Yeah, me too. But you know, I don't think that I will bring it out for sure next time. Like, yeah. It was good, but it's, yeah.
Like okay, to maybe quantify this a little bit for listeners here. Like, the first time I played it at Gen Con, Christine and I went back into the vendor hall to see if we could buy it immediately. Right? You know, and we were disappointed that we couldn't. And we've been meaning to pick it up ever since. After playing it the other night, I'm less inclined to go buy the game.
Interesting.
Yeah.
See, and I'm still super glad I got it, and I definitely want to play it a few more times.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it definitely isn't for that, for that fourth play. It wasn't as good as the first, second, and third plays.
Yeah.
I think for me, the best play was probably the second play, which was the one you played with. Cause I played it once before without you mm-hmm. with Kopac. And then I played it again with you and him.
Yeah.
And I think that second play,
and there were five or six of us playing.
I think there were six
of us in that time. That was a blast. Big group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this, so we had five. I feel like I would really like to try with eight sometime and just see how crazy it is. I bet with eight, it's a super low scoring game.
And it goes real quick too, I bet.
And it goes real fast, yeah.
Yeah.
As long as people are making quick decisions. I feel like that's a game that is mostly immune to analysis paralysis. Because you've got a lot of choices, but they're all pretty simple.
Yeah.
And none of them seem super, like, intense for choices, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to make this choice, and it might hose me for the round, but nah. I mean, it's just one round, whatever.
Yeah.
Even though that's actually super important, and you very well could lose the game.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, we also played...
what was that little game that we played?
No Thanks.
No Thanks.
Which is one of Katarsky's absolute favorite games. Mm-hmm. It was all right. It wasn't as good as he made me feel like it was going to be. I mean, I thought it was going to, like, change my life, because mm-hmm. he was so excited about it.
He's a passionate guy.
He is. I think I would rather play that game with like three people.
Yeah. Yeah. Five was a lot.
I felt like that was too much. Mm-hmm. But it's okay. I mean, it was, I enjoyed it. It's a clever little game.
Yeah.
Which is probably why Katarsky is such a big fan of it, because
it's very simple and very clever. Yeah.
He likes simple games that do clever things. The scoring mechanic is kind of devious, and I like that, you know, with,
sneaky.
And I like the forcing of people to buy things, like to take cards. So basically, if you haven't played No Thanks, I guess we're being rude here. If you haven't played No Thanks, it's technically a trick-taking game, but it's like an anti-trick-taking game.
It's barely a trick-taking game.
So everybody gets 11 coins, or tokens, really. And then there's a 36-card, there's a so-many-card deck, a 30-something card deck.
32.
Is it 30?
Yeah. Size number's 35, and it starts at 3.
Okay, yeah. So you ditch...
you said nine cards?
You ditch nine cards, yeah. And then you play with the rest. So the idea is the stack of cards in the middle, you flip one over, whatever number that is, you can either choose to take it and put it next to you, and it's golf scoring. You want the lowest score possible. Mm-hmm. Or you can put a chip out and say, no thanks, I don't want it. Mm-hmm. And it keeps passing along. And then when somebody eventually does take that card, they get that card and any chips associated with it, which you can see the power in that. Mm-hmm. Obviously.
And one chip at the end of the game equals minus one for total score.
Yeah. So one chip at the end of the game is, you know, helpful, and having 15 chips at the end of the game is super helpful.
Right. And if you have cards that are numbered consecutively at the end of the game, then you only score the lowest of those consecutive numbers.
So if you have like 8, 9, 10, 11, that's only 8 points. But if you have 8, 9, 10, 12, now it's 20 points because it's the 8 and the 12. Yeah. So
it's very simple scoring.
Yep.
And you're right. With the chips in there, it is pretty sneaky.
And it was with so many people, it was hard to keep track of how much score everybody had, because Will, like, creamed us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we, like, I totally thought he was losing.
Yeah.
I'm like, how did that happen? Like, how did we not notice?
And I thought I made a lot of really bad choices and ended up in second place.
Yeah, I know.
So I think a few more times of playing that, and we would have the scoring down a little better. And, man, that was super loud.
Yeah, I can't even make it do it again. There it goes. My water bottle. Sorry. Sorry, I buy cheap water bottles because they're cheap.
Anyway, so, if we played that a couple more times, I'm sure we would probably have a better handle on scoring and how that would look, right. You know, as the game goes
and
on. But
fewer players would probably help as well.
Yeah.
We were playing with max players. It's 3 to 5.
3 to 5, okay. Yeah, but it was a good game.
Was that all we played?
Yeah, I guess it is, yeah. I brought more stuff with me, but we didn't. We had 5 people, so Party was not an option.
I was hoping we'd play Parade, and then it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
Next time, that's on my list for sure.
Yeah, and I brought Card Game Simulator with me. That we didn't have time for that either.
I don't think that'd have been a great audience for that, though.
Yeah, they wouldn't have found it quite as funny.
No.
Yeah.
That's definitely a gamer game.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but so that was a good time. Mm-hmm. So that's what we've been playing, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Thanksgiving as far as listeners are concerned, Thanksgiving was last weekend, and it's this coming weekend for us.
Yeah, for us, it's in 2 days.
So, any big plans or any games you're going to bring to family Thanksgiving?
No, we're actually going to skip family Thanksgiving,
yeah,
and stay home on Thanksgiving. And
so jealous.
I know you are. Roe and Will are coming over. Will's going to fry a turkey. It's going to be a good time.
I am so jealous
because it'll be awesome. So we're going to do that, and then. On Saturday, we're going to go see some family for a little while. And then I've got my last tournament for Dice Masters.
On Sunday?
On Sunday to finish out the thing. And I have to go because I'm in first and you get the grand prize if you're in first.
Yeah. And mathematically, there's no way you could possibly not be in first place.
I could show up and not play and I'll still be in first place.
As long
place.
As you pay your entry fee.
Right.
Yeah.
So, So I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Gripe about that, by the way. I was telling you this earlier, but I'm going to gripe the listeners. It's been $10 a month, right? You get 10 packs, right?
Yeah.
$10, you get 10 packs.
It's like buying 10 boosters with no tax.
Yep, and you automatically get a free card for playing, which is a basic action card. And they've been pretty cool. Not all of them are great, but they've been pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, if you win or take first or second or get the fellowship prize, you get like a special character card, which are pretty awesome. So for $10, especially if you place and get something, it's pretty stellar, right? This last one's going to be $15. And I asked the guy, I was like, why is it $15? So he asked the guy who's in charge, and the guy who's in charge said, well, there's more prize support for this one. So to be clear, the more prize support is the grand prize, right?
Mm-hmm.
So two people who are going to show up at the tournament are, again, like you said, mathematically guaranteed to take those prizes. I don't mind paying an extra $5 for that. Heck, I'd pay an extra $10 for that.
And by extra prize support, it means you get the bonus card or the prize card that comes with a die.
Right.
Yeah.
And you also get, they're also giving away the normal monthly prizes, right?
All
right. But like, come on, dudes. So basically two people are guaranteed to get that. And then one person will get a fellowship version of it. So everyone else, the probably 6 other players there, paid $5 extra
for nothing extra,
for literally nothing. They paid $5 extra to be in a lottery that they probably didn't even want to be in because the odds weren't that good.
Yep. Yeah, it's crappy. Our local friendly local game store is not our favorite local game store.
Yeah, it's sometimes, I mean, you know, they can be really good. They can also be kind of persnickety about stuff, and it's just kind of annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, it's rough. Though, you know what? I did get an email from them today saying that due to weather problems, the comic books are going to be arriving late this week.
Yeah, I got that email, too.
So I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I haven't bought a comic book there in a year. No, excuse me, a month. What am I saying? A year?
A year? I was like,
no.
Really?
No, I used to buy those, Future's End.
Yeah.
And then Future's End got real dumb.
Okay, so
real dumb. It. And I gave up on that after about 8 or 10 weeks. Anyway.
Nice. Well, let's talk about some game topics here.
Okay.
So I was looking for a topic this week, and I was talking to our friend Andy, and he suggested we
talk. Andy's basically like the third host of the show.
He kind of is. He's the silent host.
Yeah.
He doesn't actually talk on the show.
Right. But he helps you prepare every week.
He's my go-to guy. Like, if I'm like, I need a topic, I'll throw it out on Twitter, but I'll also say, hey, Andy.
Hey, Andy, tell me what you're talking about.
What are you interested in as a designer? Because he's a newer designer, so he's interested in a lot of the same things we are. Though Andy is smarter than we are.
Much smarter.
So today, I'm not going to go into all the details because I'm not going to try and explain what he told me to talk about.
And he's a jerk because he's constantly reminding us how much smarter he is.
So I said, hey, Andy. I need a topic. And he starts listing off these topics. I'm like, dude, I don't know anything about those topics. I'm like, can I get a topic for dummies? And he's like, oh, yeah, how about you talk about, and that's what we're going to talk about, which is the 2-3-4 player problem, which is something a lot of designers struggle with. In fact, I would say pretty much every designer struggles with, depending on the game you're designing, which is how do you not only scale a game, But also, you know, there are things that work very well in head-to-head that do not work at all in three or four player.
Yeah.
There are also things that work very well in three and four player that are terribly balanced for two player.
Yeah.
You know, so so this is the problem you and I have had a lot. And, you know,
a lot. Yeah.
It's funny because I actually remember talking to Matt Loomis about this, and he said, I think that if your game is having a problem with two to four players, like that jump there, if you're having problems with one of those, there's just a problem with your game. And he's not wrong. I mean, there is a problem with your game, but I think in my mind, I would say I disagree because I think that oversimplifies it.
Yeah.
I think that you can design a game. I think some games want to be two player games, and I think some games want to be two plus player games, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There are some games that you could easily play with two players, but they're not going to be nearly as fun.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily a problem of the game as much as it's a reality of playing games.
Mm-hmm.
Some games are more fun with more interaction. And I don't see the need to handicap a game, right? Because
sure.
You want to make it better.
Just because you want to put that number on the box.
Yeah, exactly. I think doing that would be wrong. And that's something you've been very good at, I think, is... Like, you design a lot of two-player games, and you do not apologize for that.
I don't, because I'm honest about how I play games. And most of the time, even when you try and drink it dainty, you still do it wrong,
probably,
and it cracks.
Hold it like
and,
this.
Yeah, hold it like a man would hold it. Okay, I don't apologize for designing games, trying to design games that play the way that I like to play games, which is two-player, you know?
Right.
Kind of casual, a medium weight, light to medium weight strategy. It's simple to learn, simple to put together and put away, you know?
Right.
That's what I like.
See, and for me too, like, one of the things I run into is the issue of roles. Like, I like to put roles in games. I like where I play this guy, you play that guy. And actually the game I'm going to pitch next week for our challenge we're doing, has had that issue at first. And then I actually was like, oh, wait, no, this is way easier, just do it this way. But, I mean, I have that issue sometimes where I'm like, okay, there's four roles in the game. Unless those are just, like, characters you're playing, not, like, actual, like, full roles, it can be hard to... How do you make the game balance without one of these people? Or how do you make, like, a ghost player of one of these, basically, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times that's not the answer,
it's
is
tough,
to
yeah.
have a ghost player, you know? That's not always fun. So, mm-hmm. I mean, like, trick-taking games, right?
Yeah.
Most trick-taking games cannot be played with two players.
Right.
Why? Because it's not fun when you or the other guy takes the trick every time, right? And because the information is very, well, if you don't have it, then I must have it. Now, granted, you can fix some of that by ditching some cards.
Ditching some cards, but still.
Right.
Yeah. So I think the first thing we're saying here is, if you're thinking about, if you have a game that's already working well with X numbered, don't be afraid to stick with that number.
Right.
You know? I mean, if you can get it to the 2-4 or even 2-6 player,
right.
If you can get that working, that's great. And that's something you should at least try to do. Okay? But if it just doesn't work, don't be afraid of that.
Right.
Because sometimes two-player games are just best as two-player games. And sometimes four-player games really should just be four-player games.
Right.
You know? And there's an audience for everything out there.
Right. I mean, granted... You're going to be harder pressed to sell a game that's four player only than two player only.
Well,
clearly, because
it's tougher. But
that the idea is that if the game is better that way, the game should be better that way. Now, I would say that a lot of games, 3-4 players should play about the same. I think more issues you're going to run into is with the jump from 2-3-4. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So then let's talk about ways to try and front load your design to make that stuff more possible, right?
Okay.
So I always like to use King of Tokyo as an example,
right?
A game that I feel like does two player really bad because the way that game is structured is it just doesn't work for two players.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. We house rule the game when we play it, so
yeah,
to make it more fun with two players.
Yeah. Because one of you is always in Tokyo.
Right.
You know, it's just boring.
Being in Tokyo, the only benefit is you're scoring points. You're not
right.
attacking everyone.
Right.
You're just scoring points.
Right. So that's a game that I think is kind of at its core structure is flawed when it comes to a two-player experience. And it's, in fact, I don't know this for any kind of fact, but in my brain, I feel like the designer intended it to be a four-player game, and right. the publisher shoehorned it into two.
Right.
Because they wanted to fit a...
Or you know, they said to the publisher, hey, this is a 2-4-player game, you know?
Yeah.
And they did a lot of testing with 3 and 4 players.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm just guessing that. But that's what it feels like to me.
Right.
So, so think about the structure of your game, and if you really want to accommodate different player numbers, and you need to make sure the structure works that way. So what does that mean with structure? So if it's inherently a A versus B kind of situation, let's say red versus blue kind of situation, that fits well with a 2-player. You might be able to tweak that to fit a 4-player model if people are working in teams or in tandem in some way.
Right.
But then it's tough to fit that into a 3-player situation or even a 5-player situation. That's tricky. One game that scales very, very well is Dominion. Dominion scales incredibly well for 2-4 players.
Because you're basically playing your own game.
But that's exactly right, because everything you're doing is you know, right here in front of you. You're not really doing anything else anywhere else on the table.
Right.
And so that's another thing to think about is you need to think about how the players are interacting with each other.
Right.
Are they interacting at all? Hopefully they are. And really, that's the only bad thing I could ever say about Dominion,
right.
is that there's not enough player interaction in right. it. But what you're doing right here in front of you is so fun that I don't care
right.
most of the time. So think about the interaction with the other players and how that interaction works. And is what you're doing, does it require you to have a lot of options from a lot of players? Or are those options driven, or what you're trying to accomplish driven by other things within the game design?
Right. And I mean, if you have like a 2-player heads up style game where it's like a, you know, like a dueling game or something like that, or something where the purpose is to eliminate the other players,
mm-hmm.
3 players pretty much ruins that, because now if it's player elimination, right, with a 3-player game, the chances of 2 people ganging up on someone
mm-hmm.
are pretty solid. Same thing goes with a 4-player game, though. I mean, you could look at the same with a winner, you know, like mm-hmm. where somebody is winning and then everyone gangs up on the winner, you know. But another thing to think about, too, is I think in relation to that is kind of scoring and how do I say this? Scoring and your kind of your shot at winning, right? Like, do I feel like I can still win at the end of the game, right? Because if you don't feel like you can still win at the end of the game, you know, like, 10 turns in of a 20-turn game, I know I'm done. It's a 4-player game, right? Now, in a 2-player game, I don't know that I'm done. I'm gonna do my best to still beat you.
Yeah.
Or we're just going to call it, right?
Yeah.
But in a 4-player game, when I'm the lowly guy who knows I'm losing, what do I do then? It depends on my personality, right? Do I then say, well, I'm not going to win, so I'm going to, A, be a nice dude and just keep playing like it's cool, B, be a total jerk about it. Yeah. Lots of other words going through my head. Be a total yeah. jerk about it and ruin it for everyone. Or C, am I going to be a kingmaker and mm-hmm. say, well, if I'm not going to win, then Rob's going to win. I'd never say that.
No, but you would never. That's nonsense. Why on earth would you ever do that?
In fact, I'd be like, I'm not going to win. I might as well make sure Rob loses too.
Yeah, sure.
Which would annoy you, and it should, because that's childish. So
it's standard procedure though.
For us, yes.
Yeah.
But I mean, so that's something to think about too. Like in a 2-player game, you can be a little more varied with your scoring, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey, I'm creaming you, dude. That's just how it is. But
mm-hmm.
in a 4-player game, you don't want that to happen. You don't want runaway leaders, you know, or you want one runaway leader. You don't want runaway losers even more so than runaway leaders,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. at least with runaway leaders, you can gang up on the leader. It's annoying, but it's better than being the lowly guy who's just losing,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's something else to consider, I think, when you're thinking about that. And obviously there's some solutions you could probably use for a 3-player that might work a little better than for a 4-player, just because of the different dynamic. I mean, I think with 3-player, my big concern is always, if it's player elimination, you're going to gang up on someone. Like,
yeah.
It's not even like you're going to mean to, it's just what's going to happen.
Just likely to happen, yeah.
Because if I attack you and you attack me back, now that means the third person has to attack someone.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter who they pick. You're now ganging up on someone.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to be, okay, Rob, I'm going to attack you. Now you attack Joe, and Joe, you attack Jason. And all right, now we got a nice, you know, circle of death here.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that doesn't happen.
No, never happens. Yeah.
But you could make that happen in the game, actually. Always attack the player to your left.
Well, that's so forced. Well, whatever. That's forced. A different
I'm just saying.
Different it's a conversation. Thing. Like, yeah. So, okay, what else?
That was what I had.
Yeah. So, I'm totally blanked out. My brain just totally shut down.
So let's go over some notes here about what you're doing. Okay.
Yeah.
So first of all, you want to think about like your kind of your core game. What do you want to achieve with your core game?
Mm-hmm.
First question to ask yourself is, should that work with four players? Right? Should it work with two, three, and four?
Sure.
Or and beyond. Mm-hmm. And if the answer is no, then that's okay.
Yeah.
Know how many players you need. Now, if you make a game that's three player only, I'm going to guess you're not going to sell a ton of copies. That's a super awkward number.
That's
you'd be better off going with four player only.
Yeah, that's tough.
Or obviously two player only. But you have to think a lot about that, right? So in the beginning, and there are times when like I'll start to work on a game and I'll be like, well, man, I guess this is going to be a heads up game. Like I wanted it to be four players, but I just don't think it's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just deal with that. I mean, granted along the way, so along the way, you want to watch out for signs to see if, well, no, maybe I could make this work that way. And I think in playtesting, at least when you're kind of exploring, force it, make it a four player game, make it a two player game, make it a three player game. And if it sucks, scrap that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's okay. Like in that exploration phase, that's totally cool. But when you're pitching it to publishers, you know, and you may get a publisher that wants to shoehorn it. I mean, then it's up to you, right? Do you want to, I mean, I know we've seen that happen before.
Sure. We have. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, and if that's the case, then hey, that's just got to deal with it. Or, you know, I mean,
So here's a thought. What do you feel about the idea of, let's say we've got a game that's good for three, great for four, doesn't work for two. What do you think about the idea of an alternate play style, same theme, same components, kind of a different game for two players?
I'm not opposed to that at all. More publishers have been looking at like even solo play variants for their games. That's been a new thing with Kickstarter with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that that's positive because, you know, I mean, as long as people are super clear that, you know, it says three to four players with a two player variant. Because if I play test a game, like if I go to Gen Con and I sit down and try a game out, I demo it and I'm like, oh, this is so good with four players.
Mm-hmm.
And then I play it with two and I'm like, this is a different game. I'm going to be mad unless that game is way better.
Well,
you know, but still, I'm going to be annoyed that I didn't know.
Yeah, sure, sure.
So yeah, that's, I mean, I don't know how you feel about that, but that's
I mean, I'm largely on the same page there. Yeah. In fact, I might prefer a game that is marketed two player, but has a four player variant. That's actually a little more attractive to me personally. But that's because I like two-player games.
Right.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Are we done with that? Did we kill that?
I think we did. I mean, I think we covered the topics. I think we BTG'd it. I don't think it was perfect, but...
We BTG'd it. That's all we can hope for. All right. Well, why don't I go ahead and practice a pitch?
Do it to it.
Yeah. About a little over a week ago, as of this recording, I was hanging out at home, and I do this sometimes when I'm listening to records at home and doing whatever. I'll tweet pictures of whatever album I'm listening to at the time, and I like doing that, and I like hearing people's responses on Twitter. And I got in a conversation with Daniel on Twitter. He is at Point Salad. And we were talking about records and good albums, and he said, and also Chris from Flip Table is involved in this a little bit. But anyway, he said, this sounds like a pitch challenge. Design a game based on an album cover.
And I immediately popped in and was like, that's a great idea.
Yeah, me too. I thought that was a fantastic idea. A game based on an album cover. So I immediately jumped up from my couch and started tearing through my record collection trying to find something that I thought would make a really cool... or have a cool potential on it for a game design.
Nice.
Yeah. So I think you're going to pitch your idea next week.
Yep.
And this time it's my turn. So
it is.
So Daniel, a.k.a. at Point Salad, here we go, sir.
And I will put in the show notes a picture of the album cover.
Yes, yes. Now, my particular album, there's two versions of the album cover. There's one that I have, which is like the good one, and then there's an alternate cover that's not as cool.
Okay.
It's for the Led Zeppelin album Physical Graffiti. All right, and I am specifically talking about the vinyl record album cover.
Right.
Okay, not a CD cover, not, you know, cassette tape cover, whatever. So this is a pretty famous album cover. And so listeners, either go to the website and check the show notes for a picture, or look it up on Google image search right now. But it's a picture of two brownstones in New York City. Okay. And the nice version of it, like, which is the one that I've got, these are 4-story buildings. So there's a door, a front door, for each of these. Two windows, or a window on either side of the front door. So two doors and 4 windows across the bottom. Then there are 3 floors above those. In each of these buildings, there are 4 windows. Okay. Mm-hmm. And in the version that I've got, many of these windows are actually cut out. And then with the disc sleeve that slides inside of the album cover, there are pictures of the band printed on that. Mm-hmm. And so you see the band members kind of peeking through these windows of this building. And you can pick, you know, slide it. And as you slide it out, you see the pictures change and things. So it's just kind of a cool little cutout
there. It is.
Yeah. So I thought that would be a really cool thing to take as inspiration, right?
Right.
And I thought about this a lot and about, can I incorporate things from other Zeppelin albums or songs or went into this? But ultimately, I was looking around and looking at a track list for that specific album, Physical Graffiti. The first track on that album, do they even call it on a record? Is it called a track? I guess it'd just be a song. I'm not sure if that track is the right terminology.
I don't think it is.
Yeah. Anyway, the first song in that album is called Custard Pie. Okay?
Custard Pie.
Custard Pie. Now, if listeners, if you want to Google the lyrics to that song, Custard Pie, you can kind of learn a little bit more about what that means in the context of the song.
Okay.
But I'll let listeners do that on their own because my game will branch from that a little bit. Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Little Zeppelin research there for you. So this is a 2-4 player game. All right. The idea here is that we are burglars and we have broken into this building. It's technically 2 brownstones, but we're going to say they're adjacent to each other. Let's say it's all one big building, okay? And we are there trying to find the custard pie. We're looking for the custard pie, but we only want to get the custard pie if we can get it in secret. So we can only be in search for the custard pie in rooms where the lights are out. Okay, but the man of the house is walking around, and we want to avoid getting caught by the man of the house. All right. You actually don't just look for the pie. You need to get 8 slices of pie and then get out of the building without the man catching you, and then you win the game. So very silly, right? So let's see. The game board is basically the album cover now modified so that all the windows are cut out, not just some of them. But you would have a sleeve that fits underneath that, and it's not the same record album cover. It's going to be printed with pictures of the interior of rooms. Okay.
Oh, that makes sense.
And
yeah.
Some of them are lit, and some of them are dark. So lights are on, and lights are off. Okay. And then every player has a pawn that they're going to be moving from room to room in this game. And when they're in a dark room, when the lights are out, they can search in that room. Okay, but they can't search when lights mm-hmm. are on because otherwise they might get caught.
Right.
But then there's another pawn that's the man of the house, and he can also move from room to room. And if he ends up in a room where you are with the lights on, he's going to catch you.
That makes total sense. Right.
Okay, so...
what happens when you get caught?
You have to discard all of your pie slices and go back to the front door.
Okay.
Okay, so basically he takes all of the custard pie back and kicks you out.
It'd be cool if one person got caught, if that somehow made it harder for everyone else.
Maybe. Sure. Okay.
Like, now I'm on alert because somebody's trying to steal my pie.
Yeah. Yeah.
America.
Yeah. I've realized recently that's the thing. Whenever somebody says America, I go, America. It's a call and response thing with
me. Yeah. You got to.
Yeah. Do you do that too?
I think so most of the time. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like I have to.
Yeah.
America.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because...
Solidarity.
Just, yeah.
You know? Okay. Anyway, now, so you're moving your pawn from room to room, right? If it's in a dark room, you can either hide from the man or you can search for a piece of pie. And there's actually, there's a deck of cards that you're going to be turning over. That'll be your pie slices, but it might also be some other card options. All right. But if you're in a lit room, you can't search for the pie and the man might find you. Okay. All right.
Right.
All right. Now, the way you actually take actions in this game, though, the way that works, I stole straight out of Damsels in Distress.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So each player has a deck of 7 action cards, and every player has the same 7 action cards, okay? And on your turn, you're going to take 3 actions. You're going to play 3 of those cards. And on your next turn, those 3 that you played on the previous turn, you can't use again. You nice, now have yeah. to use 3 more cards from your hand, all right? And then discard those. And then the first 3 you pick up, you put back in your hand. You're constantly rotating through these 7 cards, and you can take 3 actions on your turn, but you cannot take the same 3 actions in a row.
Right. Okay.
So the 7 actions that you have available to you. First is light switch. Okay. Play that card. You can flip a light switch. Basically, you can slide the sleeve the lighting guide in or out of the board. In or out. Basically, you change the lighting condition.
Right.
Okay. And it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to turn every switch on or every switch off. It just changes the lighting condition in the building. Because you can only move safely from dark room to dark room, that's going to change your strategy as the game moves forward.
Right.
Okay. Sneak. If you sneak, use your sneak, you can move one adjacent room. Okay. But only one space. But you can sneak through there and you're not going to get caught by the man. Cool. Okay. You can run. Run allows you to move 2 rooms, but you are not concealed. When you get there, there's no way you can hide. Because if the man saw you, whether the room's light or dark in there, you ran in there and made a bunch of noise to do that. So you're going to get caught if the man's in there. Okay? You can search. The next option is search. Search would be to flip the top card off of the pie deck. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then you can move the man. You can move the man 1 space, 1 room, in any direction. You can hide. So you can hide from the man of the house. So if you're in a dark room, then you can hide instead of searching. You know what? I guess you'd be able to do both if you have both cards. I need to figure that out. Anyway, so you can hide from the man, but you cannot hide if you just ran into the room because there's no option there. In that case, if that's the only card you have to play, you got to get rid of it. Or you can play a card. So you use your action to play a card from your pie deck.
Okay, right.
Cards, right. All right, so card types that you're going to be getting when you are searching a room. Obviously, there's the pie slice, and you get 8 of those and then get out.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a double slice card. It's good as 2 pie slices. You can shuffle your action deck. So you can pick up your action deck and shuffle it and start all over again. You can move the man 2 rooms. Instead of just moving 1, you can move him 2.
Okay.
All right. You can hide from the man with no penalty from your run. Or you got a pie tin. So if you put your pie slices in your pie tin, when the man catches you, you don't have to lose them all. You can keep right. carrying them with you.
Right.
So that's about as far as I got. It's super kind of shaky and goofy, but that's the basic idea for and the game is called Custard Pie.
I like it.
It's really dumb.
I mean, it's kind of silly.
It's super silly. I like it. Okay. Yeah, so you're walking around the brownstone on the cover of Led Zeppelin album, and you're looking for the delicious custard pie, but you better do that quick before the man catches you.
Nice. Yeah.
So, and listeners, again, if you want to go and read the song lyrics, you'll learn a little bit more about my inspiration for that, because it's pretty funny. I think it's pretty funny anyway. Yeah. So that was a super fast pitch, man. I'm sorry.
It's okay. We got a voicemail here.
Oh, great.
So
good, good, good.
That was emailed to us by Pablo Schulman.
Okay.
And he said, "Hey, I got my voicemail, and I hope you can understand what I say. This is my first time I record my own voice, and it kind of sucks. So I hope you understand my English."
Okay.
So let's try and play this. Let's cool. see, Pablo, if we understand. He actually just emailed me and he said, "I want to make sure you guys got that." I said, "We did. We're going to play it on the show tonight."
Excellent.
So.
What up, BTG? Here's Pablo from Brazil. I didn't know how to use that number, phone number you have, so I'm recording this stuff here because I thought you might like a Brazilian accent for a change. I'd like to talk about that Huffling Ham surfing idea, which I thought it was awesome. I'd really like to play that game, and really, it was the best idea ever. And I like it how you dealt with different powers and stuff like that. I don't know how to say it anymore, but I'm really looking forward to play one of your games. I don't care if it's Jason's or Rob's, but I'm really looking forward to see how that Jason's game about, you know, the deck culling game, the noir detective game, is going. I hope you're still, you know, trying to do something with that. I'd like to play Epic Monster Tea Party as well. I really liked the idea. Okay, one question for you guys. So, just like you, I don't know, as a gamer, because every gamer, I think, has the same dream of publishing some game. Do you think your constant pitching made it better to have new ideas, or you have, you know, because I find I'm better developer than I am a designer. I struggle with ideas. For example, I have several theme ideas that I just can't find the right mechanism. I don't know how even to start the game, you know? So I don't know if I'm not playing enough, or it's kind of like every game I think there's a better game already published. So what do I do? Thank you for listening to that. I guess I rambled a little bit, and yeah, keep up the good work, because I love the podcast. Thank you. Bye.
That was the best voicemail ever.
By far the best voicemail we ever had.
Thank you so much, Pablo. And
thank you.
I for one could totally understand your English. So
absolutely.
That's awesome. There were a lot of things in there. To start out, we'd love for you to play one of our games.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You should do that. That would be great. Second, I'm not currently working on the noir game. I've got it on hold for now. I might go back to it. Since I said I stopped working on it, multiple people have been like, "Why aren't you working on that game?" The only people who haven't said that are the people that have played it. So, so I know that I've got some work to do with that if I want to make it better. So it's sometimes it's tough to find the right mechanics for the game. And most of the time, you're going to feel like there's a better game out there that does what you want to do already. I mean, the fact is, there's thousands of games out there, and a lot of them are really good.
Yeah, way better than anything I'll ever come up with, honestly.
So I think you need to focus on finding a theme you're passionate about and not caring if there's a game that does it better. Just try to be different. Try to do your own thing, you know. And if you're better at developing, then get somebody to help you with kind of the core mechanics, and then, you know, get it started. And then you just take it and run, you know. I mean, nothing wrong with being better at developing than design.
Yeah, and we've talked about that before, the difference between design and develop.
Yeah.
Yeah, design is the original idea, the inception, the put together the basic bones of it. And development is make all those crazy fancy ideas into something that works really well all the time.
Right. I mean, I would say Rob and I are both way better at design than we are at development.
Absolutely.
And neither one of us really enjoy development all that much. Development is a tough gig. So if you like developing games, that's cool.
You're doing better than we are.
Yeah. It's a different skill set, and it's really cool.
Yeah.
You know, designing a game is like a short sprint. Developing a game is like a marathon.
Yeah.
And that really is the truth.
What you said is right. You know, find a theme and a concept that you're passionate about. And you know what? If you have a theme that you really, really like and you have a basic concept you really, really like, there's nothing wrong with just trying a bunch of different ways to approach it.
Yep,
you know,
absolutely.
Try a mechanic. If it doesn't really do what you want it to do or doesn't feel the way you want it to feel, try a different one. You know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I mean, you guys should see some of my Google Docs where I'm just brainstorming to myself. I literally just write as if I'm having a conversation with myself in a Google Doc, and I will go through six different mechanics ideas before I come up with something that I think works well enough to talk about on the show, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, and I'm at a point, Jason and I think both are at a point where we can kind of talk that sort of stuff through or think it through. Now, because we've gained a better understanding of how stuff works mechanically. But, you know, when we were starting out, we would just try things that would just fail miserably. So, you know, don't be afraid of that.
Sometimes they still do.
Yeah. Don't be afraid of that. Keep in mind, neither one of us is published yet, like officially.
Right.
You know, I mean, Jason's on his way, but...
But, I mean, the game's not out. So, you know, until then, I don't feel like I'm actually published. And I published my own game, but I don't necessarily feel like that counts. Even though I'm not taking away from anyone else who published their own game.
No. But,
I just feel like I did mine just to learn something. So
yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. You know, that's a good, healthy thing to do. So, but keep it up, man. Don't get discouraged. Don't let your own misgivings or your own personal insecurities get in the way of any of that stuff. Because this should be fun. And it's about creativity and just having a good time with it. And as long as you're having a good time with it, that's the important thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but thanks for listening. We appreciate it. We need more international messages.
We do.
Come on, world.
I know there are listeners from other countries.
Yeah.
So start recording.
Talk to us.
Sending it to us.
We love that. That's super cool.
We're going to need that.
Yeah.
So, I think that's all I have.
That's all we got.
Do you have anything else? So,
no. No Twitters or any others?
No. We.
Oh, we have that email from Chris.
We do.
Yeah, you want me to read that one?
Yeah, you read that one.
Yeah, okay.
That is an epic email from our friend Chris from Flip the Table. Hey, we did actually have one Twitter question that I just saw again from John Dubois. John just asked, and I'll just take this one because I know you and I have the same feedback for this one. John said, hey, how long is it appropriate to wait before I harass publisher basically again to say, hey, what's up with this game you're looking at? First and foremost, depends on the publisher. It depends on your relationship with the publisher. If you know the publisher well, and you have good rapport with them, I think you can wait less time. Or if you know the publisher likes to be contacted multiple times. But even with publishers I've dealt with more than once, just kind of showing them games and stuff, after a while of not getting responses, I just finally stop sending them stuff. Because I want someone to publish my game, but I don't want to harass them until they do it. You know what I mean? Not that that would work, but like it might turn them off from it. And I guess I just figure, hey, if you're not responding, then maybe it's because you're not interested. Mm-hmm. That said, some companies take forever to respond even when they're super interested. So it's a hard question to answer because publishers are fickle people.
Yeah. You know, I haven't told the end of my story about Tea Party and the publisher's interest in that. Should I tell that story?
I don't remember the end of that story.
Well, the end is that I never got back. So I said a while ago where I had made a deal to meet with a publisher at Origins, right?
To
meet with them about Epic Monster Tea Party. I had sent them a copy from GameCrafter, and they said they were just madly in love with it, and they really, really looking forward to talking to me about it at Origins. And I got to Origins and was texting and emailing the guy saying, hey, where are you? And he said, after I'd already got to Origins, oh man, sorry, I couldn't make it, but let's get together at Gen Con. And so we traded a few more emails at Gen Con, or before Gen Con, and then it got to be about a week before Gen Con. I still didn't have time to meet with him, and he wasn't replying to me. And he had a booth at Gen Con, but I felt awkward just walking up to him and looking him in the eye and saying, hey, man, I'm the guy you've been ignoring for a month. Do you still want to buy my game? That felt real weird. So I didn't do that, and maybe I should have, but I didn't do that. But a couple of weeks after Gen Con, I sent him another email saying, I'm sorry, I missed you at Gen Con. I don't know what happened. Are you still interested or not? It's cool if you're not. I'm just, you know, I might have another publisher interested. That was a lie, but I might have another publisher interested. So I just want to, you know, want to have that conversation. And the guy didn't email me back, but somebody else did from his company saying, oh, hey, I'm really sorry. So-and-so is just really swamped right now. He's real busy. It's a busy time of year. Keep on him. Keep sending him emails and he'll get back to you eventually, I promise. So I did for like two more months and never got a single other reply. And so I just gave up, you know.
Yeah.
And I, once again, so this is the second publisher that I've been kind of crapped on by with Tea Party.
Right.
And it's really, really frustrating and discouraging. And again, I'm not going to say who this publisher was either. Of course, that's uncalled for.
Because you want to be more professional than they were.
Exactly right. So, you know what? Hey, guys, it's happened to me. And publishers are tough. Publishers can be really, really tough to work with and talk to. So it hurts, but keep on keeping on. There's nothing else you can do.
Keep on keeping on.
Yeah. So anyway, so we've got this great email here from Chris. Do you want to set this up?
So recently, well, a while back, actually, we were talking about Monopoly on the show, and I was like, I think this works like this. We could look it up, but we could also just say, hey, Chris from Flip the Table, if you're listening, why don't you tell us how it is. Tell us what's the what.
Yeah, right.
And he did.
He did. So first of all, Chris, congratulations on being a new dad.
Yeah.
We're all very happy for you. He sent us an email. He says, after falling behind due to baby stuff, I'm finally caught up. Thanks for the multiple shout outs. You're welcome. You guys are great. You're like our favorite podcast.
It's true.
Yeah, better than ours. If mentioning money under free parking was intended to enrage me, it may have worked more potently than expected, as I immediately threw my phone through a plate glass window and started shouting obscenities at passersby. When the police showed up, I tried to give them my get-out-of-jail-free card, but I was roughly beaten and dragged away. I have yet to post bail, mostly because my salary is being held up as a result of not passing go. So to answer your question about trading in Monopoly, it is legal and encouraged to trade tangible goods, including cash and properties. It is expressly forbidden, however, to trade intangibles such as loans, rent, immunity, or other favors to be named later. So there is no possibility for broken deals, so
right.
to speak.
That makes sense.
That doesn't mean you can't get creative, however. If three players have split a color group, for example, I might pay an inflated cash value to one of those players to help them build improvements in exchange for getting that property away from them, and positioning myself a chance to trade into a Monopoly later. It's a risky move, but sometimes it works. Anyway, jail sucks. Great show, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
That was good.
Yes. Yeah, so that's a good response to Monopoly. You know, another one of my favorite podcasts is actually the How to Do Everything podcast.
I like that one, too.
Yeah, and a couple of weeks ago, they had a professional Monopoly player on to talk about the statistics of Monopoly.
Nice.
It was pretty interesting. So I recommend checking that out if you guys are at all interested.
Nice.
I think it was the November 14th episode.
We're here for How to Do Everything, and today we're talking to those guys.
Yeah, they're funny.
They're kind of dorky, but I like them.
Yeah. So that's probably enough for tonight, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. We appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also call our voicemail at 770-TEL-BTG or record it and email it to us at buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Jason is at JASlingerland, and I am at poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and you can go to our website, buildinggamepodcast.com, and buy copies of our games. You can get the Water Balloon Washout from Jason. You can also find links on there to My Games and the Game Crafter, which are the Rumpelbum Academy for bug-based baking, and Epic Monster Tea Party, and Finish It, the Outrageous Storytelling Party Game. You get all those, and it's a good time, and I don't know what else. I think that's it.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Yeah! Watch out! Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time, on Building the Game.
And this is episode 131. Episode 131, right?
131.
131. Okay, ready?
It's a 1, and then a 3, and then a 1.
What? Yeah. Is that how that works?
It's a palindrome.
You just blew my mind.
I know, right?
Okay.
If your name was Bob and not Rob, it would also be a palindrome.
This, yeah, like the simplest palindrome in the whole world. I want to make a game called Live Evil, because that's a palindrome.
Yeah, I know.
I want to make that game, but I don't know what that would be. That's me being like you and coming up with titles without a game to go with it.
There's nothing wrong with that, dude.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I want to do that. Anyway, you ready?
Evil Live.
Yeah, well, Live Evil, I think, is a little more, has a few more options.
Evil Live just sounds like it's a stage production.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Come see Evil Live.
Right. The Devil on Stage, 10 nights in December.
In Las Vegas, because where else would he be?